Welcome to War Room, the official podcast of the U.S. Army War College online journal, graciously supported by the Army War College Foundation. Please join the conversation at warroom.armywarcollege.edu. We hope you enjoy the program.
Hello, and thanks for joining us today on the War Room podcast. I'm Jackie Witt, Associate Professor of Strategy at the U.S. Army War College and the War Room podcast editor. In almost any discussion of contemporary national security issues, the international environment and global security are critical topics for consideration, and developing deep regional expertise and understanding is likewise central to the formulation, implementation, and evaluation of strategy and national security policy. We have a deep bench of regional expertise here at the War College, and we are also lucky to host many guests who are subject matter experts, either as academics who study a particular region, or as practitioners who are involved in regional security issues. On today's program, we're pleased to welcome retired Air Vice Marshal Arjun Subramaniam of the Indian Air Force and Dr. Patrick Bratton, who is Associate Professor of National Security in the Department of National Security and Strategy at the U.S. Army War College and the Course Director for the South Asia Regional Studies Program. Air Vice Marshal Subramaniam spent 36 years in the Indian Air Force, primarily as a fighter pilot, but later in his career he also served on the Air Staff and as a key player in India's professional military education system. He holds a PhD in Defense Studies and is the author of three books, including recently India's Wars. Given his expertise and experience, we've asked him to sit down in the studio with Dr. Bratton to discuss the military history of South Asia and its influence on the contemporary security environment. So we turn now to their discussion.
Hi, I'm Patrick Bratton, Associate Professor of National Security in the Department of National Security and Strategy.
And I'm Air Vice Marshal Arjun Subramaniam.
Thanks for joining me today. I'd like to start by asking you to tell us a little bit more about your research on Indian military history. You've recently come out with a book on India's wars, covering Indian military history from really pre-independence, but independence all the way through the 71 Bangladesh Liberation War. I guess the way to start off, I would like to kind of start with you is, why should Americans, particularly our students and faculty here at the U.S. Army War College, why should they be interested in military and in Indian military history? It seems quite far away from their own experiences. Why do you think they might be interested?
At the outset, Patrick, I'm delighted to be here at the Army War College. I think I'll take your question on in two layers.
Mm-hmm.
The first layer is a strategic one. I know it's widely acknowledged by many strategic analysts, even in the West, that the globe's strategic center of gravity is progressively shifting eastwards, not only in the continental domain, but also in the maritime domain, with the increasing usage of the term Indo-Pacific. And it is in this context that the two major players in this region, from a U.S. standpoint, are China and India. Now, studies related to China, whether it is in the military domain or whether it is in the technological domain, are absolutely robust in most of your institutions, because China is seen as a principal competitor and even an adversary of the United States. But entering into this equation has been India in the last couple of years. And India is a power of consequence. It is a strategic partner of the United States. And it is in this context that I think there is a need to increase the levels of knowledge about India within the U.S. And as far as the U.S. military is concerned, I think it's important to understand a partner, particularly the military. And the best way to understand a partner or a military is by understanding the kind of legacy that the Indian military has had over the last couple of decades. And that is why understanding war and conflict in contemporary India is essential for U.S. military officers, particularly for those who would be assigned to South Asia, who would be assigned to the Indo-Pacific. It's a broad-based necessity in today's changing times, in my mind. The second layer is that is purely bilateral. If we're going to be friends, if we're going to be partners, if we say that we have shared interests and shared alignments, it is but natural that it is imperative that we know more about each other. And our militaries have engaged more in the last 2 years than what the U.S. military has engaged with any one of its other partners and allies. And therefore, understanding contemporary Indian military history, I think, is very, very important.
If you're thinking about the experiences of the Indian military through its military history, if there's one sort of thing that you think Americans should know about Indian military history to better understand the Indian defense establishment, the Indian military, what might it be, would you say?
The Indian military has adapted to technology, to diverse technology very well.
Mm-hmm.
You see, we started off with a preponderance of old British and U.S. equipment, some of it. And then we moved on to more robust Russian equipment. And in between, we pushed in British, French. So I think the Indian ability, the Indian military's ability to absorb technology and to absorb diversity has been phenomenal.
Mm.
And that's something that I wouldn't say that's something that the U.S. military can learn from that, but that's something that the U.S. military can be comfortable when they operate alongside the Indian military. They say that you know that comfort zone can be there. That look, English is a language that both of us understand. The Indians are comfortable with operating both Western and Soviet technology, and so the sheer diversity and the sheer flexibility of the Indian military is something that I'm sure the U.S. military has observed over the years of interacting with them.
Hmm.
And the second thing that the U.S. military would do well to sort of engage with the Indian military is to, you know, the Indian experience in counterinsurgency operations has been deeper than what the West recognizes. And much of India's counterinsurgency operations have been conducted within the geographical confines of India itself.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore, the Indian experience of conducting operations in a restrained and a responsible manner is something that that I'm sure U.S. counterinsurgency experts have sort of taken away. And if I'm right, a lot of engagement of the U.S. Army with the Indian Army has been in understanding each other's concepts in counterinsurgency operations. I mean, so the U.S. Army does come and engage at our counterinsurgency schools, understand more about the Northeast insurgencies, about the insurgency in Kashmir. The Indians understand more about combating extremism and terrorism. So I think there is a lot of convergence and takeaways that both the militaries can hope to sort of gather from interacting more with each other.
Mm. I wanted to kind of shift a little bit, talking about the book that you've been working on, and of course the sequel. What are some of the challenges to writing and researching military history, Indian military history, I should say?
Yeah, again, two or three quick ones.
Mm-hmm.
One is the basic texture of Indian history, contemporary Indian history. You know, contemporary Indian history, particularly after independence, has been dominated, and I think unfairly so, by political, social, economic, and cultural historians. And military history has been seen in the country by and large and within the political establishment and the academic establishment as a forgettable legacy of our colonial past.
Mm.
And therefore, even though India's military, I think, has played a very important role in the preservation of Indian democracy in a manner in which it is dear to the Indian people, but it hasn't got the necessary attention and inclusion in an overall historical discourse. And that has been one big challenge of how to convince the historical establishment at large to say that, hey, look, the Indian military and its exploits since independence merit inclusion within a broader historical discourse. So that was the first challenge. The second challenge is Indians post-independence haven't been very good at archiving issues in any discipline. And that's been a big problem about writing military history, because there just aren't enough adequately declassified archives available in India for somebody to take on military history as a profession. And that's why you don't have any departments of military history in any one of our universities. Even in our war colleges, military history as a discipline is not studied as intricately or as deeply as it is done here at the U.S. War colleges. And you're able to do so because your researchers have adequate access and huge volumes of data available to analyze and come up with certain lessons. Unfortunately, in India, we don't. So that's the second challenge. And the third challenge is Indians generally are a little averse and apprehensive about introspection and learning from mistakes. And that's why many of our campaigns or conflicts after independence haven't resulted in any decisive end result. There have been a lot of casualties. There have been mistakes made. And I just think that we are still a little unwilling or reluctant to learn from the past and from our mistakes. So these are some of the challenges that one faces when writing military history in contemporary India.
I wanted to pick up on a theme that you mentioned about decisive effects in warfare. One thing we spend a lot of time with our students here and at the War College is often the disconnect between strategy and policy, that often the U.S. military is able to win tactically, win operationally, but to deliver sort of the strategic results that policymakers desire, there often tends to be much more problematic. How would you say, has India struggled with the same dynamic? Have there been successes, failures in trying to meet strategy and policy?
You know, the only time I can think of two occasions wherein there has been a seamless weaving in of strategy with policy. And both times it's resulted in either an operational success or a strategic success. The strategic success, obviously, is Bangladesh and the war on the Eastern Front, where there was perfect synergy between strategy formulation over the period of March to December and the strategic political objectives that were aimed to achieve through policy. And the other time when strategy resulted in a robust policy was over Siachen. But otherwise, generally the Indian strategic establishment has struggled to be able to convert its ideas into policy. And one of the reasons is because of the rather chaotic nature of Indian democracy, multi-party democracy, which has views on national security and defense that stretch from one end of the spectrum to the other. Whereas in the United States, you don't have that much of a problem because you primarily have two parties that have generally similar views when it comes to issues related to national security. So converting national security strategies and doctrines into policy in the United States hasn't been all that difficult. Except in recent times, when there have been divisive strategies and policies advocated about your wars in Iraq and Afghanistan, and differing end state perspectives, but otherwise, generally, it hasn't been so problematic. In India, it is a problem converting strategy and doctrine into policy because of the sheer diversity of our policymakers and those who make strategy and talk about doctrine, and. To make things, in complicating matters, is a fact that India hasn't yet articulated a national security strategy or a national security doctrine. And that doesn't make things easier.
No.
So we have generally seen that Indian policy with matters to related to national security have been flexible and at times reactive. If India wants to be more proactive when it comes to managing its national security, there has to be a robust structure in which strategy and doctrine can get converted into policy that allows operational practitioners to be proactive in their approach towards national security.
Do you see a slow movement toward that as the individual services now have been publishing unclassified service doctrine, and then last year we had the first unclassified joint doctrine? Do you see a move toward eventually a sort of Indian national security strategy in the next few years?
Yes. I honestly believe so, and I hope so. Though though we still have a long way to go before putting together a robust joint doctrine. You know, if you look, for example, I was very closely associated with the Indian Air Force doctrine that came out in 2012. And if you look at the Indian Air Force doctrine, and if you look at the recent Indian Navy doctrine, if you look at them as standalone publications, they are fairly robust. But when you look at the joint doctrine, you realize that probably not enough of thought or synergy has gone into bringing out that joint doctrine that has the stamp and approval of all the three services. So the joint doctrine, while a step in the right direction, seems to be a bits and pieces document, whereas the individual services doctrine seems to reflect a lot more, how do I put it? It reflects more robust operational thinking. Now, the challenge is, how do you put everything together to come out with a robust joint doctrine? I think we're going to see that not very far away from now.
Okay. I want to just close with one last question. If we're thinking about, for you, as we see more interest in the United States, as India is a security partner, we see more mill-to-mill and then other high-level engagements with India and the United States together, what are some of the key legacies of sort of India's military history on the contemporary sort of security environment in South Asia?
One is that I think under the present BJP government under Prime Minister Modi, India is finally beginning to understand the role of force in statecraft, the role of the military in statecraft. There has been increased emphasis on partnerships. There has been increased emphasis on interoperability. There has been an increased emphasis, albeit very slowly, towards jointness. And I think India is taking adequate steps to convert itself into a really modern fighting force. But if there's one legacy of the Indian military that we're all proud of, it is that the Indian military is well respected all over the world for its professionalism, for being a inclusive, secular, and a force that truly represents the diversity of India. It's technologically abled. It is flexible, and I think it has grasped the nuances of contemporary war fighting. A lot of experience in high altitude warfare, a lot of experience in counterinsurgency operations, a lot of experience in peacekeeping and peace enforcement operations. So I think, contrary to a wide, you know, again, it's a question of perception. There are not enough narratives from the Indian military that show it as a truly modern, flexible, and a force to reckon with. And I think one of my endeavors through my military history writing, as well as in the sequel that I'm working on, is to sort of share the right narratives about India's military as a significant tool of Indian statecraft. So I think that's the major takeaway from my work on contemporary Indian military history. I look at my work on contemporary Indian military history not as pure vanilla history. I look at it. I like to look at my work as what many call today in the United States as applied military history, wherein one looks at military history not from the lens of mere battles and campaigns, but look at what its impact on larger issues of strategy, nation building, and geopolitics are. So I think in that context, lots of lessons to learn from India's recent conflicts.
Interesting. Well, thank you very much for coming in and talking with us today. Again, thank you for sharing your thoughts. And I think we all look forward to reading your book and the sequel that will come out.
Thank you, Pat. I've enjoyed my little time here at the Army War College. And I hope to be back to share more perspectives in the future. Thanks,
Pat. We hope to have you. Thank you. Bye.
And that concludes our program. Thank you for listening. The views expressed in this podcast reflect those of the speakers and do not necessarily reflect the views, policies, or positions of the U.S. Army or the Department of Defense. Let us know what you think. Provide us your feedback, comments, or suggestions through our webpage at warroom.armywarcollege.edu. And have a great day.